the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true. I love you.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you all. That was Sarita singing Sunny, that beautiful voice of hers, and then that great speaking voice of Frank says after the night. He took over the Tonight Show and had me on as a guest. This is John Barber. Welcome to John Barber's World here in Las Vegas on March 7th. My world is a little sadder today because of bad news. Downton Abbey is finished. And my favorite character outside of Maggie Smith, the young Irish socialist, at the end of the show is turned into a used car salesman. But worse news, folks, worse than listening to used car salesmen, is the Jerry Springer Republican debates are still on the air. And Bill Clinton has yet to be arrested for breaking the law a little while ago, campaigning for his roommate at a voting station. Bill and Hillary are the Bonnie and Clyde of American politics. Unlike in life, Bill says he wants to lie next to his wife in their grave. The inscription will read, "Here lie the Clintons," and lie. You know, there are only about three people in this whole country of the United States who will come out ahead after November. Three comics. And one of them isn't even American, John Oliver. Last week, John did a brilliantly scathing, satirical, truthful skinning alive of Donald Trump. Trump had belittled John Stewart for changing his Jewish name, asking him why he wasn't prouder of his heritage. Then John Oliver closed his brilliant piece pointing out that Trump had also changed his, meaning he also disavowed his heritage. And if you were one of these Republican family values folks, a picture today on Facebook that you should see shows Trump's smiling son, a gun in hand, showing his values. He values shooting leopards. The friend who sent the photo to me said, "John, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree," and I replied, "No, the turd doesn't fall far from the asshole." Now, what is disappearing rapidly in our country along with civility and taste, as you have just heard, is wit. But today I stumbled across three examples of wit that I would love to pass on to you. Of course, the first came from an Englishman. A member of parliament named Skinner stood up and shouted, "Half the Tories across the aisle from me are crooks." And of course, he was quickly reprimanded by the speaker and told to retract his statement. So he said, "Okay, half the Tories across from me are not crooks." And then Bette Midler today said, "She is a shut-in now, addicted to watching the debates, saying every damn commercial, though, is either for Viagra or Cialis, which means either way, we get screwed." And then Bernie Sanders finally came up with a doozy. Bernie said, "If you've been watching the Republican debates, you see why the country needs a good, free mental health program." So I'm going to conclude my few comments by pointing out this to you. Some First Amendment cowards at Facebook have begun taking down some of my rather simple, harmless posts. This one, for example, was taken down twice today. So I am reposting it, and this is what I have to say. most Americans, I hope, are more interested in the issues rather than listening to the bottom-feeding frenzy of verbal assaults, especially the physical insults of the low-life Republicans at one another. These are the folks probably voting for Bernie, the only one with a modicum of dignity. These Bernie supporters are much too tasteful to point this out. So I will do it for you and for them. Bernie Sanders is the candidate for the presidency with the largest hands. So, a big hand for Bernie Sanders. And now, the good news. My two guests, in the entire history, and I mean this, in the entire history of this country, any political junkie or professor would be hard-pressed to find a member of Congress more progressive, brighter, a more active, outspoken, truly dedicated public servant than this woman from Georgia. And that includes Abe Lincoln from Illinois. Like Lincoln, she ran for the presidency. He was physically shot down in office. She was politically shot down for standing up for us, demanding changes in a murderous foreign policy, investigations into fake wars, student loans, banking, Wall Street, impeaching Bush for Iraq, and pre-knowledge of 9-1-1. Investigations also, she suggested, into the murders of Martin Luther King and John Kennedy. Issues no politician today talks about, not even Bernie. Her attempts for re-election were sabotaged because she was pledging her life and oath of office to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the United States of America, and not to AIPAC. On my Facebook page this morning, I posted a 2007 rally for peace that took place in front of the White House. She spoke there with her son. She spoke with truth and passion, both of them. This is her second appearance here in John Barber's World, the first time with her son. It is an honor and a privilege to welcome Cynthia McKinney and her amazing son, Coy. Coy and Cynthia, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having this unique show. That to have a father, a mother, son, and then, I mean, you know, it's kind of political, kind of not political.
Well, because you are, the last time you were on the show, I mean, I thought this woman could do a one-woman show on Broadway. You'd be better than Whoopi Goldberg. I mean, you were so wonderful. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Dhaka, Bangladesh.
What are you doing over there?
Teaching.
Where?
North South University. I'm teaching in the business school and two courses in the business school and two courses in political science.
Well, good for you. I got an email from your mother about 6 or 7 weeks ago, and she said that she was hoping that you'd come home and run for the Senate because she said, she said, I'm telling you, she said there's a lot of support for her daughter in Georgia to run for the Senate. Would you consider something like that?
Well, I would absolutely love to do that. The only thing is qualifying is going on literally right now.
For you?
No, for all of the Georgia candidates, the period to qualify for as a candidate for the election, actually it starts today.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Yes. And I'm about, what, 20,000 miles away.
Oh, well, you deserve to be back in Congress, believe me. Coy, welcome to the show. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling in from Washington, D.C.
What do you do in Washington, Coy?
So I work at a charter school, and I'm the school garden and greenhouse coordinator. So I pretty much grow plants, teach kids how to grow plants, cook vegetables, and pretty much introduce them to sustainable farming.
But you didn't start out that way. Weren't you an attorney at one time?
Yeah, so I actually moved to DC for law school, and at the end of law school, I realized the legal profession was not for me. And so while I was in law school, I started to get my thumb a little bit greener with urban farming. And once I graduated, I had to make a choice to either wear the suit or get some boots and get dirty. And
Wow. How
I
what?
chose the boots and the shovel.
Well, in looking at some of your bio, you started out all over the world. Now, Cynthia,
Yes.
your son was born where?
He was born in Jamaica.
Why?
Well, at the time, I was married to a Jamaican. And it was actually a topic of conversation that became quite heated with my mom because, you can't be born anywhere in the world except in the United States. And my dad would say, well, giving birth is the most natural of things. But then he went on to explain himself, and he said, women have babies in cornfields. So that only made my mom more furious. But my dad won out on that argument, and I had a very natural childbirth in Jamaica. No
Well,
problems at all.
it sounds like your son inherited your father's philosophy because he's ending up in cornfields and growing stuff. Anyway,
That's right.
okay. Now listen, I'm gonna ask a couple of personal questions here, so you can slap my face from 20,000 miles away if you wish. But what happened to Coy's father? How long are you with him,
Well,
and why are you with him?
I ended up getting a divorce, and it was basically because of family differences and maybe cultural differences. And it was very, very, very difficult living in Jamaica and living with that particular family. It was extremely difficult. And so after too many times, I just decided to pack my bags and leave. I did that many times, but then the last time I didn't go back.
Coy, do you remember anything about your father? Did you see your father after your mother packed her bags?
I remember there was one time he came to Atlanta, and I was a little bit older. I don't know, maybe first grade or something like that. And I remember he was at the front door, and then I opened the door and I saw who it was, and I just ran right back upstairs because I didn't know anything. I didn't know what was going on, and I was like, "Oh, I should probably be out of here."
Boy, your mother did a job on you, didn't she? Okay, now, Cynthia, you packed your bags, then was it Italy to where you moved and not the United States?
No. I went back to the U.S. and Italy only comes in later. I went back to the U.S. and then my dad was, well, the short story is while I was in Jamaica, my dad was having beef with one of his colleagues. He was in the Georgia legislature. So he signed me up to run for the Georgia legislature, even though I was in Jamaica. I didn't even know it. But I didn't do too poorly. So with the marriage basically over, even though I didn't get a divorce until like 10 years later, with the marriage basically over, I decided to run for the Georgia legislature and I won.
And how old was Coy? How old were you when your mother won that election? Do you recall?
Oh my goodness. Probably three or four,
Okay,
something like
so
that.
then you probably wouldn't be aware of how magnificent your mother was in Congress. I mean, what a public servant that your mother was. What was your mother like as a mother in the house, and when did you first realize that your mother was special as a citizen?
Wow. So really, like, once I was in high school, that's when it really set in. I mean, growing up, I was like, there's something different about my life compared to my friends. But I didn't know exactly what it was until really high school and the 9/11 stuff. And that's when I was like, oh, man, my mom is no joke. So, and then afterwards, I mean, she had planted some seeds and she had said stuff that maybe gone that went over my head when I was younger. But then as I grew up and got older and, you know, saw the world a bit more, I was like, oh, that's what she was talking about. That's what's going on.
As a mother, did she ever have to reprimand you?
Were you a class clown? I was kind of a class clown. I kind of like to play around and joke around with some of my fellow students.
Well, you know, your mother has a remarkable, often not seen sense of humor, and that's why thought she would do great on Broadway or off Broadway doing a one woman show. Why did you get into law and not into showbiz if you were the class clown?
Well, I guess I had like this political social awakening while I was in college, and I realized that a lot of my jokes weren't actually that like politically correct and not what I wanted to, you know, what I wanted to like represent myself. So, I kind of went through this phase where I was like, oh, wait, I got to deconstruct all this mess that I've been, like, you know, getting from pop culture. So I'm trying to get into, you know, that's been its own process. And now I'm trying to get back into, like, you know, being politically correct and funny, which...
have you thought of running for office yourself? And I ask both of you. I don't know if, Cynthia, you would have seen it that far away, but maybe Coy saw it last night. A really kind of interesting brief profile of Canada's young Prime Minister Trudeau, who's 44 years of age. Have you thought, I mean, when you look at these reprehensible debates and you see what a treasure your mother was, have you thought about running for office? And having been born outside of Canada and the United States, could you become president of the United States? Anyway, have you thought about running for office at all?
I used to think about it growing up, and then I also remembered the how brutal the media is. And I was like, man, just for telling the truth, you surely do get in a lot of trouble for that. So I don't know. And right now, I don't think it's very good to be a politician. I would not want to be a politician because I don't think anyone really likes them in the U.S.
I'd ask Cynthia that same question because you have been there, Cynthia, and you were there for a long time and you did a lot of good. You still do a lot of good. When you watch these debates and you look at them all, do you think you would like to get back into it, or have you just withdrawn completely?
Well, of course, I haven't withdrawn completely, but at the same time, you know, what Coy wrote, it's in the book, Ain't Nothing Like Freedom. I think it's the very first article after the book is what Coy wrote. And he wrote that after I lost in 2000. Well, I didn't lose. The election was stolen.
Yes.
In 2006. And it was just, you know, sort of the piling on and, oh, my gosh, it was, you know, he wrote about how can the system be so bad for somebody who's trying to do so much good. And it's one of the most poignant sort of op-eds in the entire book. And it was written by Coy just asking a simple question about how could something like this happen, and how can, you know, our system tolerate that? And so now for me, looking at the debates as much as I do, you know, it's all just a charade, and you can choose to take the which pill is it now? The blue pill, and stay inside the, you know, the major. I never got it. I never went down that rabbit hole. And I wanted my son also to never go down that rabbit hole. That's why, you know, even though I gave him, sent him, you're right. He went around the world for school, high school in Italy, and undergrad in Canada. But, I wanted him to be a citizen of the world and know that there was something out there much larger than just, you know, Northwest Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, you know, you're in a position to change the world when you're a politician. And yes. I think one of the things that Trump has done inadvertently by entering this race is to point out the absolute abscess of venality, yeah, that and evil that exists. And Ronald Reagan used to call the Soviet Union the evil empire, but as Pogo pointed out in the 70s, I've seen the enemy and it is us. And now we are that evil empire. But it's so degenerated now, how could it ever improve unless it's by a politician?
Well, you're right that there are things that only someone who has the letterhead can do. That's the way I put it. People still call me. They still send me emails. They still are reaching out to me through Facebook and asking me, you know, explaining their personal situations and asking me for help. And I do what I can, but I also explain to them I don't have the letterhead. And the letterhead is really the power. It's the attitude with which you attack a person's problem while you have the letterhead. And I was fierce about that. And so I was able to get things done for people. People remember that. Even now, they still remember that because I was able to accomplish things. But now you can't even get your representative on the phone. I had a mayor in the area. Now, you know, Rahm Emanuel, yes, recruited the guy who is in there now, who ran against me. And I had a mayor from my area contact me and complain that he can't even get a meeting with, let alone get the guy on the phone.
Oh, my goodness gracious. You know, that's so brilliantly put, the letterhead. That is so well said. You know what you are, Cynthia? You're the coal miner's daughter of politics. You're the Loretta Lynn of politics. Here's this girl from nowhere who wrote these brilliant songs all by herself and became a legend. And here you are, this political genius. And where on earth did you come from? I mean, I could understand Coy's being aware and being smart because look where he comes from. He comes from Cynthia McKinney. Now, Coy, you give up being a lawyer. Whatever drew you to the work that you do, the public service that you do in growing these crops, or explain in more detail exactly what it is that you're doing and where you're doing it. Is it in Washington, D.C. or outside Washington?
No, it's actually in Washington, D.C. It's actually in Southeast D.C., which is across the river, and it's a majority black, low-income area that's, you know, often neglected part of town. And it's the work that, you know, it's really about food justice. So really what I was looking to do is do something with social justice. And from my time in Vancouver, I started to learn more about the environment. And then I got here and started wondering about my food. And I was trying to like find some type of universal moral code that we could all kind of like live by. And I thought maybe the legal system was it. And the more I studied the legal system, I was like, no, that's not it.
First thing we do is kill all the lawyers.
Yeah.
Okay, do you grow Do you grow crops on roofs? Do you grow crops on areas that don't have houses on them? How many people are involved in doing this? And when you started to do it, did you do it on your own, or did you join a group or build a group? Tell me about it.
Yeah, so it's been a process for sure. I've kind of just dove in where I could fit in. So currently I'm at a school. It's a brand new building that has a greenhouse, and they also have a school garden area. So I'm just trying to grow as much vegetables and, you know, introduce the kids to nature, because that's one thing that I don't really think, at least I didn't understand growing up. I thought I was separated from nature when really we're all a part of it. And I think being involved with nature and observing how it works, there's a philosophy behind nature that I think we can apply to our lives.
Okay, so here's a question for you then. Using the knowledge that you have and the track record that your impressive mother has, could you not somehow prevail on whoever the next president of the United States is to make you Secretary of Agriculture?
That would be nice. That'd be great. I mean, I think I might need a little bit more experience, but yeah,
need any more experience than the heart that you've already evidenced. You know, when Trudeau's 44 years of age, right?
Mm-hmm. And
he entered a boxing ring he got some conservative that the boxer he knew was going to kill him, and he ended up beating this boxer. And he told the interviewer, who said what you said, but the interviewer said to him, well, you don't have experience being prime minister, okay? And he said to that interviewer, an inarticulate woman, by the way, he said, the idea of being a fighter is not to hit anybody. The idea of being a fighter is being able to take a punch and get back up and get back in there again. And your mother has taught you how to take punches. So the sweet soul that you are. And I saw you read that wonderful letter on that campaign for peace in front of the White House in 2007 when I posted that you read that moving letter from that, I guess it was the Afghan veteran or the Iraq veteran, and I thought, my God, that young man should be in politics like his mother. So Cynthia and Coy, do you mind if we take a call?
No, not at all. Go right ahead.
So thank you. Thank you. Mike?
Hi, this is Mike in California. My friend in Hawaii, Rob in Hawaii, is sick. He has strep throat, but he wanted to ask Cynthia, would Cynthia consider running for office again if AIPAC was not in the way?
That's a good question.
Well, if AIPAC weren't in the way, I would still be in office.
Oh, my God, that is so true.
And I also have a question for Coy. Why did he quit being a lawyer?
Oh, just the profession, like the system. I feel is corrupt, and I didn't want to be a part of it. I thought I could do more good for society. Actually, growing food and teaching people how to grow their own food, and you know, start building a community from there.
Coy, doing what you're doing in Washington, do you get much press or much attention? Where do the funds come from that help you do this, what you're doing?
So there are a few grants. So DC is actually pretty progressive when it comes to school garden grants. The DC government provides annual grants for school gardens. I also volunteer at a neighborhood community garden, and there is an annual grant that Fiskars does that we applied for and won. So and some of it's just been like crowdsourced fundraising, so we've been bit by bit getting the money together to make all this happen.
I think Coy is being extremely shy because basically one thing he starts from with the composting. So he starts with the soil. And the whole point is that everything is organic. And then he stands in front of the metro station, the subway station, and gives away organic food.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
Yeah, he's really being real shy about the full scope of what he does. He's taken a church, adopted a church in this food desert, because, you know, we do have food deserts in the U.S., and he's taught the people how to grow their own organic food, including aquaculture. And Corey, you should really talk about in the Southwest, the Southwest Community Garden, which is in Southwest DC, is something that he started from scratch. It was just a place where the low income housing was.
How large is it now, Cynthia? How large is it, Coy?
So we have 37 plots at this, 37 raised beds at the Southwest Community Garden. And we have two sections. We have one section that's for individual plot owners. And then we have another section that I help coordinate that's called the communal section, where we have open work days. Anyone's welcome to come. We have parties. We have harvests. You can help plant.
Have you seen any young men in this area who look like they might grow up to be gangsters or whatever they might be, maybe break the law or steal some hubcaps or some petty crimes? Have you seen them being transformed into something else by seeing plants actually grow?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there have been some kids who we've had issues with. Well, we hear that they're throwing rocks at people or they're running around, you know, kind of like being a nuisance. And when we're in the garden, they always want to water. So then that gives us an opportunity to not just only just like, you know, help them learn about how to water a plant properly, but also say, hey, we've been hearing the way you've been treating other people. And then, you know, try and teach them about the golden rule, you know, at a young age, so that, you know, don't do to other people what you don't want done to you. And just being kind of like a mentor, because, you know, there's no force for the kids to come to the garden. They just go there because they think they have relationships.
Do you get any help or assistance or encouragements or pats on the back or money from the Jesse Jacksons of the world and their sort?
I guess we're flying under the radar over here.
You can't be flying under the radar when your mother can. I mean, you should shout about what you're doing as loud as your mother does, for crying out. You are doing something that's helping transform a city.
Yeah.
I mean, you should
like
be going
so.
Hey, you should be writing notes to Jesse Jackson, sending him pictures and testimonies from these kids and saying, hey, dig into your pockets on that rainbow thing that you have and withdraw some of those millions of dollars that you have and send it over here so we can grow something.
That would be nice.
So, anyway, Cynthia, I just absolutely adore you. You should be so proud of your son. And Coy, you should be so proud of your mother. And the book that you mentioned in which Coy's op-ed piece exists, what is the book, where is it, and how can people get it?
The book is available on Amazon. And the name of it is Ain't Nothing Like Freedom. And it basically recaps some of the issues that I was involved in when I was in the Congress and sort of the attitude that I took to Washington with me. Because, you know, now we have people who, well, during the time that I was there, and it has become more acute now, you know, it's very cynical, and it's, you know, this vote is a money vote, and even though I know it's the wrong way for me to vote will go against the interests of my constituents, but I can get a lot of money if I vote this way. And so you've got that kind of cynicism going on, where some votes are characterized as money votes, and they, even though it's wrong, it's going to be right for the individuals there. So that is the kind of thing that I discuss. in the book, and sort of the attitude against that way of thinking that I took to Washington and left Washington with as well. Some of the issues that I got involved in and would never have touched were, you know, if I were making the calculation, and some of them, they say, well, I gave the labor unions my vote that time, so now it's my turn to give somebody else, you know, those who are opposed, to give the corporations my vote this time. And so it's all a very cynical balancing act that in the end has nothing to do with the people that voted those personalities into office.
Okay.
Late, I've been talking about direct democracy as opposed to indirect democracy, because
that sounds like Mike Gravel.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Two quick questions to both of you before we say goodbye and thank you again. Do you think either one of you, both of you, that we may be seeing the last so-called democratic election in the United States? And who do you think will be the next president of the United States? Cynthia, start with you.
Oh, I was going to say, Coy, you go first.
Okay, Coy, you go first. Okay. Well, you're in Washington, Coy, you go first. Which one of these turnips will we be looking at in January?
Oh, my goodness. I have no idea. I just pray that it's not Trump. I mean, good grief. the last Democratic election, I know, I mean, I guess with my experience with American Blackout, the documentary that chronicles my mom's life, and the election in Florida and Ohio, I don't think we've had one since then. So
you know, you're absolutely right about that. Okay, Cynthia, your turn.
Yeah, I would agree with Coy that it's been a long time, but I would say that the non-democratic elections have taken place long before then. You know, President Carter said he couldn't be elected now under the current rules, and he characterized the United States as an oligarchy. So maybe we might say oligarchy too, but so in terms of
play with words
and the electronic voting machines, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, that's how they did it to me. So electronic voting machines are a problem. In terms of you know, I'm not ready at all for President Clinton again, and that's because of what this former Secretary of State did in Haiti, what she and her brother ends up with a gold mine in Haiti after she steals the election in Haiti. And then if we look at Honduras, the coup in Honduras, the emails that have been exposed. I've been trying to read the thousands of emails that have been released so I could find out what was on the secretary's mind. And of course, if we go into not only the election theft in Haiti, but the awarding of contracts in Haiti to companies that gave money to the Clinton Foundation. That's one angle that hasn't even been looked at. So former Secretary Hillary Clinton as president is out of bounds for me. And then we haven't even gotten to talk about Libya.
You know, right. I wish Bernie Sanders would play that reprehensible short video of her on camera saying, "We came, we saw, he died," talking about Gaddafi, and then cackling like the Wicked Witch of the North. Cynthia and Coy, I want to thank you both so very, very much from the bottom of my heart for both of you being here. And as I say goodbye and good luck to you, I think that the next president will not be brought in or played in by an orchestra playing Hail to the Chief. What we're going to be hearing in January is Taps for the United States of America. Thank you both for being here, and bless you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, John. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Good to hear your voice, Coy.
All right, same to you. Okay.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye. Do me a favor, Don. Don't play the intermission and the plug from George Knapp. Just bring in Joe right away. We don't need to hear a commercial for The Last Word on the Assassination. Everybody knows I did it anyway. So can you bring in Joe? Hello?
Oh, yes.
Joe, how are you? Just, I'm telling you, you are so terrific. I don't know how I could do this show without you. I mean...
Well, I don't know. You just bring on Cynthia McKinney every week.
Well, I mean, you're the best closing act in show business, I'm telling you. Anyway, that woman and her son, is they're just so amazing, such terrific people.
Well, and, you know, it just goes to show you that if you say something, the irony is that Trump is still ostensibly the front runner for saying the very thing that got her primaried, which is that the Bush administration had foreknowledge and of 9/11. I mean, basically, this is what Trump was implying, right? He said they lied about WNDs.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Coming. So that's why she got primaried. But it just goes to, and it just shows you where things have kind of moved. It also shows you how wacky things are right now, too, I guess.
But, I mean, this is so good for you as a journalist, though, as it is for John Oliver, you know?
This is heroin. Political junkies. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So what would you like to talk about first tonight?
Well, you know, I don't know if you looked at the rundown today, but there was an amazing piece about Libya.
I never miss it.
Okay. That first piece about Libya, it's very long. It was like 4,600 words. But I'm interested a little bit more in what happened, what's going on with Bernie Sanders, and the fact that, I mean, I think he's just being completely and totally railroaded by the mainstream media right now. And it is absolutely stunning. And he's not helping himself by not going more forcefully on Libya, which he could. But, I mean, really, there's no reason for African Americans to select Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. He's the guy who was getting arrested to try and break segregation.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. And he doesn't point it out enough. He doesn't shout loud enough about it, except last night he did point a finger at Hillary and tell her.
Yeah, no, it's. I'm telling you, the media is in the tank there. It is really fascinating to see what's happening on the Republican side, where Ted Cruz is about to crash the party into a building if he ends up taking the nomination, which who knows if he is or not. Trump seems to me to be imploding at this point, frankly.
Do you think the endorsement of David Duke had anything to do with it?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think David Duke's endorsement was a legitimate endorsement, or do you think he was moved by forces to endorse Trump to sabotage Trump?
No, I think the mainstream media just did David Duke the biggest favor of his life, because nobody except for people who go to Rentz's radio network know who the fuck David Duke is anymore. He's become an afterthought. And what this thing did, the media, what I think what happened is that the Republican National Committee or the Republican establishment found that David Duke had issued this endorsement, which he probably did on Rentz's network or whatever, and said, ah, here we go. And they started feeding that as a question to the media, hoping to trip up Donald Trump. And you know what? They did. And it worked. It absolutely worked. It worked.
Well, how do you think he's imploding? Except, you know, this fellow that owns Vanity Fair, Grayson Carter, whatever his name is, okay?
Great Carter.
Yeah, he said a number of years ago, must have been 25 years ago, they did a sort of a satirical piece on Donald Trump talking about what small hands he had.
I'm telling you, that's opposition research.
Yeah, excuse me, just a second, but he went on to say that every year on a certain day, the day
of the picture
article,
of his hands.
He sends a picture of his hands. I mean, that guy must have the thinnest skin in the world to
or the smallest penis. But I mean, you know, if you're happy with what you got, clap your hands. Otherwise, just stop talking about it. You know,
A young kid, he probably got calluses on his index finger and his thumb.
Exactly. he's got the hairiest pointer finger on the planet. But I we could talk about it. We should talk about that because I think that Rubio is a kamikaze candidate. I think that he was taken aside by the Republican establishment. They said, "You are young. You are not going to get this nomination. If you do these things now, we are the Republican Party. We never forget. We are elephants, right? That's our symbol. And you will be rewarded eventually. Don't worry. And you will also probably end up getting a $200,000 a year job at the AEI, you know, the American Enterprise Institute, to sit around and talk about how awesome it is to bomb brown people." So until he can run again, which will be eventually, right? Because he's still, what is he, like 40? He's like 10, isn't he? Yeah.
So, emotionally, anyway. 10. Yeah. Oh, God. It's terrible. It's just terrible. So, anyway, who do you think will be the next president?
God. I think right now, I think it's Hillary.
I don't see how she can finish.
Oh, no. I mean, unless they drop a bomb out of the FBI, out of the Department of Justice.
But she is not, you know, the fallacy is that she's supposed to be being investigated. She's not being investigated.
No, she is not. No.
Explain that. The system is what's being investigated, not Hillary. So right. Why do they keep telling us that she's being investigated? She is not.
Well, because it drives ratings. Everything about this election is about driving ratings, and the money that's being made. You know, I saw today there was a story that the Republican establishment is now pouring its money into the anti-Trump effort. Who is winning? Who wins no matter what? The major networks, Les Moonves, and I brought this up on the show probably a month ago when he said it, that Donald Trump, just keep it coming. We're buying vacation homes in the Cayman Islands right now off of these massive media buys, all of these ad buys that are going on. All that money goes. Then you have all of the political consultants, all of the production houses that team around the Washington, D.C. area. Believe me, I used to work with those people. I used to go to those production houses to do independent projects. You have all of the strategists and all the pollsters and all the party hacks, and they are making tons of money off of all of these efforts. They cannot lose no matter what. Ultimately, I think what it comes down to is that Trump's inability to contain himself and that thin skin that you talked about. Look, Rubio's attack, that's a kamikaze attack. I'm giving up my candidacy to take down Donald Trump. It knocked him down a notch. It has given Ted Cruz a little bit of an opening or an opportunity. And ultimately, I think the Mitt Romney thing does loom out there, where if you get to a convention where he doesn't have the 1237, they can come in, and on the second ballot, you can have the savior candidate. But ultimately, I think all of these things for the Republicans are based on this one calculation. We would rather have Hillary Clinton be president than Donald Trump.
Well, two things have happened since they tried to keep Bernie out of the news. I mean, for 3 or 4 months when Bernie was drawing 5 times as many people as Hillary Clinton, we never saw him in the news. But the groundswell is now so great, they can no longer keep it a secret. And the same thing sort of happened with Trump, is everybody feels in their guts that this whole system is corrupt and wrong, and here's a guy who is pointing it out. So they gather behind Donald Trump. Now, Trump may implode. That's entirely possible. But I think Bernie Sanders may be surprised by the enormous groundswell of support. And it's entirely possible, because I read an article the other day that said that Hillary had like 508 pledged candidates, but Trump had 400 and something, but the media never let you know that. It's entirely possible that Bernie may be forced by his following to run as a third-party candidate.
Well, there are a couple interesting things about what you're saying. One is, I think if Trump were out of the race, Bernie Sanders would take a portion of his supporters. True. There is more than enough anecdotal and exit polling evidence to show that people are actually going into some of these primaries, deciding whether – when if it's a same-day primary for both parties, deciding whether they want to vote for Trump or Sanders. They're talking to the same thing. It's just that Sanders is not referring, doesn't have to prove the size of his genitals, and he doesn't take the bait. Then there's no really bait being offered by Hillary Clinton anyway. And, you know, the media, the way the media is – I saw it 72 hours before Iowa. Bernie Sanders was closing on Hillary Clinton. And immediately Chris Matthews led the charge on MSNBC and saying, you know, we can't have a socialist, the Democratic Party. How are they going to put a socialist, socialist, socialist? By the way, did I say the word socialist? Oh, did you know Bernie Sanders socialist? I like you to associate Bernie Sanders and socialist. And if I haven't made myself clear, Bernie Sanders socialist. And this became a drumbeat leading into Iowa. And what I've noticed, and there were a couple softball interviews with Hillary Clinton. They have been all softball interviews since. And Bernie Sanders, I'll give you a wonderful little case in point. And you, as somebody who knows a lot about television, this will make a lot of sense to you. We had a primary, not this weekend, but the weekend before. And Hillary Clinton wins. She comes out, gives her speech. And then Bernie Sanders is about to hold his rally, right? The winner speaks first. So she gives her speech, and then MSNBC cuts their coverage. Bernie Sanders' speech only appeared on C-SPAN, and while Bernie Sanders was giving his speech, MSNBC rewound the tape and reran its coverage of Hillary Clinton's victory speech while Bernie Sanders was giving his post-primary rally.
Is it possible? You know, according to the laws of this country, the airways are supposed to be owned by the public. And they are certainly not owned by the public. Yeah. Is there any way that people could bring a class action suit against MSNBC or NBC or CBS for doing such reprehensible things? Do you know that a court in Florida, somebody brought suit against the local Fox News station for lying on a news report, and a court ruled that it was not illegal for Fox News to lie? I mean, well, what kind of nonsense is that?
No, John, I think we're in the post-fairness doctrine period. The 1990, if you want to look at anything that Bill Clinton did that catalyzed the decline and fall of American democracy, it's the 1996 Telecommunications Deregulation Act. Nothing did more damage to American journalism and governance than that 1996 act, which allowed it basically gave rise to Fox. Fox would not exist without that deregulation.
Nope, that's right. They wouldn't exist at all.
So there's that. And also we're in a cable era now where airwaves are kind of irrelevant. And I think what's happened is that I haven't seen the case precedent set yet, the legal precedent set. But basically these kinds of challenges that used to be a part of the system when the airwaves were owned by the people – now it's cable lines, and cable lines are really semi-public commons. They're not really the commons the way the commons used to be. You know, this place where we all participate and own this collectively, this one thing like a national park or a park or in Britain it was where anybody could go and get some lives, get some slaughter. They used to call it, kill food and eat it on the commons. The cable systems are not really the commons. It's totally privatized. And what the rise of cable television did was really transition America away from publicly owned broadcast airwaves and has kind of undermined the idea that you're talking about. I don't know if – I haven't really seen a legal challenge that would try and reestablish cable systems or the transit of broadcast over cable as, in a sense, tantamount to the airwaves.
Wow, what an interesting observation that is. That is so true. It has been privatized, like our prisons.
Basically, yeah, it's privatization. That's really what's happened to – and so now you can – so MSNBC can say any damn thing they want because the fairness doctrine doesn't exist. Now what's interesting is for the broadcast networks, for ABC, NBC, and CBS, that still holds because they still do – aerial broadcasting.
Oh, that's right. And you know, if it hadn't been for those frequent challenges, I would have never had my very first show, the AM show in Los Angeles in 1970, because it was Chicanos marching in the street demanding some kind of representation on the ABC station, which was Channel 7 there. So they dumped their cartoon show in the morning, and they, as a sop to the FCC, they decided to do this morning news show, and then made the mistake of hiring me as the host of that show. So,
Viva la Revolucion!
Yeah, so, okay. Anyway, oh, gosh, Joe, I just hate to say goodnight to you. You're so interesting. Tell folks where they can hear you again and frequently. Tell them where they can get that fabulous News Vandal.
So just go to newsvandal.com, NEWSVANDAL.com, newsvandal.com. A pop-up will come up when you get into the main screen, and you can sign up right there, and you'll get the daily rundown. Tomorrow night I'll be on the Ocelli Effect. That's American Freedom Radio, Ocelli, O-C-H-E-L-L-I, Effect, Ocelli Effect. And then every Friday, Inside the Headlines with News Vandal on KRUU-FM, Crew FM, KRUU. And if you just type that into Google, it'll pop up. And John, as always, great to be with you in a wonderful, wonderful exchange with Cynthia McKinney and her son.
Oh, thanks. And what you should put up on your post, because I've had a couple of people ask me about it, is a donation button.
It's coming. We are working on it. I'm going to have a full donation site with a video explaining what News Vandal is. It's on its way.
Okay, wonderful, Joe. Thank you so much. You have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week, and I'll see you again in 2 weeks and talk to you in the next couple of days. Thank you all for listening. Good luck and the very best to you. See you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 sunny.